Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome back to City of Champions Radio on Blog Talk Radio. We appreciate your listenership. A reminder, you can check out City of Champions at cityofchampionsports.com. That's where all of our programs here on Blog Talk Radio are linked on a weekly basis. This is a two-show week. Larry Snyder and I talked some overall hockey yesterday on the network, and today it's more of a general Pittsburgh sports discussion. It's an interesting time of the year as football has wrapped up, both college and pro, and baseball yet to begin, and on the pro side at least, hockey a couple of months away from that regular season finish line. So in my mind, pretty much everything is in play, especially when it comes to Pittsburgh sports, and I can think of no one better to talk about all the various offerings on the Pittsburgh buffet than the man who joins me right now. You may know him primarily from the DVE Morning Show and the Steelers Radio Network, but he also does a great deal of work with Robert Morris University in the men's hockey program, where he is the color analyst on radio, and he also writes a weekly column during the season on RMUcolonials.com. His name is Mike Persuda. Mike, thank you very much for joining me today.
Oh, thanks for having me, Matt. Appreciate it.
It's no problem at all. Looking forward to hitting some topics around here and seeing what you think. First of all, most people who might know your work through, like I mentioned, a couple of those Clear Channel duties you have with DV Morning Show and with the Steelers during their season, they may not know that you're a real college hockey nut, and I work for Robert Morris University with the men's hockey program primarily, so I get to see that firsthand whenever you come on down to 84 Lumber Arena on Neville Island to broadcast the games. Of course, we have the Derek Schooley Show at this time of year, and you split hosting duties with Steve Colby, along with our head coach, Derek Schooley, of course. And I mentioned the column at RMUcolonials.com, but I want to dig into how you got into college hockey in the first place. Around here, it's kind of a new thing. RMU D1, at least, is only a little more than a decade old. Of course, you have Mercyhurst up in Erie, and Penn State just getting started on the men's and the women's side as far as Division I hockey is concerned. But you went to school up in Michigan State, and so how did you get that college hockey bug when you were up there in East Lansing?
I set foot in Munn Arena as a freshman, and it didn't take long after that. I'd been an NHL fan growing up in the 70s, and I grew up outside of Philadelphia, and there's no college hockey there either. And it really wasn't on the radar, but I liked the sport a great deal. And, you know, I equate hockey on the same plane as football and basketball. So naturally, when I got to Michigan State, I started going to the games, and there was just something about the college sport. I don't know if it's the bands or the kind of pure enthusiasm you get at a college athletic event. I hate to say college is better or worse than pro sports, but they're definitely different. And something about college hockey really appealed to me, and I've been following it ever since. First game was, I think, October of 1980, North Dakota at Michigan State, and I was hooked.
Yeah, that sounds like a great atmosphere to get into the college sport. I went to Marshall University. We didn't exactly have any varsity hockey. We had a club team, and I played on that for 1 year as a freshman, and then it disbanded when the rink shut down. So I think we had some different experiences there, but much like you, I grew up a pro hockey fan in the Pittsburgh area following the Penguins. I did not know you were from the Philadelphia area, from the east side of the state. So were you a Flyers fan growing up?
No, my family's from Beaver County, and my dad was a school teacher, and he got a job out east just a couple months before I was born. So the immediate family moved to the Philadelphia area. All my relatives were still concentrated out here, a few in New York, but a great many in Beaver County. And my father decided that we were going to stay Pittsburgh fans. So I grew up rooting for the Pirates, Penguins, and Steelers from afar in Pitt, which is where my dad went to school. That was challenging at times, but it all worked out.
I'll say so. So you get established here professionally in the Pittsburgh area after school, and then Robert Morris develops a Division I program in 2004, conveniently enough, just when the NHL goes into its season-long lockout. So A bit of fortuitous timing there for Derek Schooley and the Colonials. Schooley, of course, the only coach the Colonials have ever known. But how did you get involved with the RMU program, and how has that relationship developed over the past 10 years?
Well, just being such a college hockey fan, I continued to follow the game after I graduated, and I would make several trips back to Michigan every season or to Bowling Green or wherever I could see a game. And it's funny, Kent State even had a team for a couple of years in the early to mid-1990s, and Tom McMillan of the Penguins and myself were season ticket holders because it was only about 2 hours away, so we'd hit one game a weekend just to see some college games. He had gotten into it. He wanted to go see Doug Waite play for Lake Superior at Bowling Green because he had heard that Doug Waite had a real good World Junior tournament, and he wanted to see what this guy was all about. So we went to see Doug Waite play Bowling Green. Dan Bylsma was in that game, we figured out years later. Didn't really notice him at the time. But so I was, a college hockey fan from afar, and it was just a natural that once we got at the D1 team in Pittsburgh, I was going to be all over that. And amazingly, I was working for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review at the time, and they weren't much interested in covering it. And then when I quit the Tribune Review, I was looking for ways to supplement my income a little bit. And I talked to Marty Galossi, a guy I had known for a long, long time at Robert Morris, and decided to start doing some website work for him. So that worked out well. And then we started doing the radio last season, and who knows where it's going. Maybe I'll replace Schooley as coach someday.
Yeah, perhaps. Who knows what's in the cards. You hang around long enough, I think, sometimes everything tends to fall into place.
You know,
so let's talk about the Colonials.
Sucked up by the NHL.
Of course, or, you know, somewhere up the chain. I'm sure he has the ability. I know that. He's done a heck of a job at RMU building this program up, and you've seen it. You've been in the area for the duration of this program, and last year that huge breakthrough going to the NCAA tournament. So a lot of fun there. Unfortunately, I wasn't a part of it. The first Colonials game I ever saw, actually, was the tournament game last year against Minnesota, and RMU doing, I think, quite well. I thought they showed off what made them special, some of that offensive explosiveness with the top line and getting back into that game, even though they went down early to the nation's top seed up in their backyard, mind you, at Xcel Energy Center. But this year has been really different, whereas last year it was a really rough start, just two wins at the new year, and then a huge surge to the finish line and beyond into the Atlantic Hockey Tournament, where they, of course, prevailed there and clinched that first ever tournament berth. This year, it's been, with the exception of a little bit of a lull around the holiday, pretty smooth sailing. First place all season long in Atlantic Hockey. Right now, at their bye week, they are 25-5, 17-3-4, a tremendous record in conference. So, on the verge of locking up their first ever regular season title. What is it about this team? And I'll take it back to even January of last year. What have you seen about this club that's made it so dominant in the past 13, 14 months?
I think it's just kind of collectively grown up. The story really starts to get interesting the season before last, when RMU had a real good year and knocked off some of the big boys, including Quinnipiac, which spent a long time ranked number one in the country. And the Colonials got knocked out of the Atlantic Hockey Tournament in the quarterfinals and were still practicing because they were still under consideration for an at-large bid. And Atlantic Hockey ended up getting two teams in the NCAA tournament that year. And Robert Morris went into that championship Saturday night. If one or two more things had happened in other conferences, the Colonials would have gotten an at-large bid. So they were – I thought that was just fantastic, surreal. I couldn't imagine that, you know, this startup program is actually under consideration to get a bid. And I don't think anybody knew how to handle it because they – came out at the start, 2-12-2 is not very good. And all of a sudden, I don't know what changed it, whether, you know, all the stuff Derek did, burning the goals the players had written down and erasing the standings board and doing all that psychological stuff he did, but they caught fire last year and had that incredible run to the Xcel Energy Center. It feels, and I want to be cautious saying this because this year's not over yet and this team is not yet accomplished what last year's did in terms of making the tournament, but it feels a little more legit to me this year, almost as if last year was a great half season, and what's happening now is the result of the program that's been established here. And it really does go back, you know, this year, the second half of last year, the season before that. They've been winning pretty consistently for a long time. And now I think there is appreciation of that, expectation for more. It doesn't feel like a bunch of kids giddy that they're doing something for the first time. It feels like they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and what they intend to do. And that's when you become really dangerous.
That's definitely something I've noticed, that desire for more, that need to improve on a week-by-week basis. These guys don't seem tremendously excited about too much, I think because so many of them, the freshmen accepted, of course, went through all that last year, and they've seen the top stage in college hockey, and they want to get back there. That's been the goal the whole time, and you talk to all the guys, and they seem to say to a man that they want to win a game this time at least. They want to go further in the NCAA tournament, but of course, as you mentioned, it was a two-bid league a couple of years ago due to strength of schedule and some of the other metrics out of the Colonials' control. It doesn't look like that Atlantic Hockey is going to yield more than one team going to the Final 16 of the NCAA tournament, so they're going to have to win the whole thing this year. But they're in a good position and pretty close to clinching that number one seed. Let's talk about Derek Schooley. You and he seem to have a good camaraderie. I always enjoy when you co-host the Derek Schooley show on 970 ESPN. Derek's, I think, a pretty entertaining guy once you get to know him. I think a lot of people see that exterior, and he's very emotional during games and definitely someone who's not afraid to let people know what he thinks. But to my eye, he cares about his team. He cares about the sport. He loves to promote college hockey, which I appreciate in the sports information department, of course. But what do you think has been key to his success here in his first head coaching job ever? He came out of Air Force as an assistant there, and he has built quite the track record on Neville Island.
Yeah, it's really been fun to see it develop. He and his staff are just – I enjoy working with these guys as much as I've enjoyed working with anybody professionally. They're just phenomenally cooperative and insightful, and they don't take themselves too seriously, which I really appreciate. It's funny, when Derek first got here, he was a first-time head coach, and it wasn't a crush of media, but the little media that he did, he was very wary about saying the wrong thing, and it was like pulling teeth sometimes. So he's really developed in terms of becoming more confident, letting his personality flow a little bit. But what I really admire about the way he goes about it is he understands how he wants it done, and he does it that way, and he doesn't waver. And for the most, you know, there are adjustments here and there, but you don't see a lot of changing of the system. You know, it's Colonials hockey's pretty known by now how they play. They play up and down, and they shoot the puck, and they block shots. And for the most part, the lines stay together, and there's not a lot of overemphasis of schematics. You know, one of the things that drives me crazy about the NHL is, I think half the time some of these coaches think people pay to watch them coach, and they do not. This just in. And a lot of times these guys want to show you and tell you how smart they are and how they figured out a better way to do it. It's about matching lines and this and that. And it's not like that here. You just drop the puck, and we're going to play our game, and they're going to play their game, and we're going to see who wins. And, you know, you see that through the hard times, you know, when you can come out of 2-12-2 last year. Sure, you throw some psychological stuff in and burn the schedule and all that stuff, but you keep playing, you keep grinding. And one of the things that fascinates me about hockey is it's a 60-minute game that takes four lines and three pairs of D doing it right to get it done, and it's a long season, and you got to do it game in, game out, week in, week out, month in, month out. And you got to have a little intestinal fortitude to survive that and thrive in that kind of environment. And just really appreciate the way these guys go about their business, as much probably as the results they've been getting.
Yes, the process has to trump the results, and that's something that Derek Schooley espouses and sticks to, like you said. And you definitely touched upon something that I've enjoyed. It's not an overly systematic game that RMU plays. They play it hard. You mentioned the block shots. That's a huge part of it. And just the all-out attack they employ. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of the top-end talent they have, with Cody Wideau 2 years in a row now, a Hobie Baker Award nominee. That's College Hockey's Heisman Trophy, for those who don't know about it. And with the development this year of Zach Lynch, a junior from Shaler, suburb of Pittsburgh, of course, that has given RMU a little bit more of a secondary option. It's not like they have to feed it to Wido every time down the ice. And I know Zach piled up the points last year, but I think he's developed further this season too. But just talking about Wido, and then we'll move on to some other Pittsburgh sports stuff. But what have you seen from him, and how have you seen him grow into a guy who is now definitely one of college hockey's top scorers and top players?
Well, he plays some defense now. That's relatively new.
Yep.
But, you know, like a lot of guys that you know, want to he came in with a reputation for scoring, and you want to prove yourself doing what you think you're supposed to be doing. But just the thing that blows me away about Cody is the variety of the way he scores his goals. He's not Alex Ovechkin on the left dot waiting for somebody to get him the puck so he can one time it. He can shoot from distance. He can drive it to the net. He can work his way through crowds. He can tip it. Any way you can score a goal, he can do that. And I've talked to Derek about this several times. Derek just says he's a guy that knows how to score. It's an innate understanding of what you have to do to score goals. And it's amazing to me, Cody's from the Detroit area, and there's a lot of college hockey teams in Michigan. And I'm here to tell you, he could play for any one of them. And Robert Morris is lucky to have him, and it's been just outstanding to see his last couple of seasons in particular.
It has been a lot of fun for me, too. And yeah, you can check out the Colonials. One more regular season game down there at Neville Island on February the 28th against Niagara. And then RMU's locked up a first-round bye, so they will host a second-round AHC quarterfinal series. That's the second weekend of March. So still some time. It's not only about the Penguins here in Pittsburgh when it comes to hockey, especially over the last couple of years with the Colonials on the rise. But, Mike, let's talk some pro hockey. You had a blog post recently on DVE.com on the Mike Pursuta Sports page talking about the Penguins' win over Detroit and a pretty dominant effort with the exception, I thought, of the third period. And last night in Ottawa for the Pens, not anywhere near as complete of an effort, more of a first period and then try to hang on. And it didn't really work, at least in regulation and overtime. They had to go to the shootout. They got the victory there. But I don't know about you, but this seems to be a bothersome trend. It actually popped up early in the season, way back when the Pens were off to that great start and pretty much everyone was healthy. But the last two games with essentially everyone back, you're not going to get Olimata back, and who knows about Pascal Dupuy and Christian Ehrhoff, but the Pens able to roll some lines and looking good for long stretches in the game against Detroit and as I mentioned early against Ottawa, but just not able to close. Is that something that you're worried about right now, or with 28 games to go, is this kind of a wait-and-see thing?
Well, when you say it's a trend, I'm going to say it's a trend that dates back to when they got good in the Mario Lemieux era, and then, you know, subtract a couple of years that they went bankrupt in between. But when they have a good team, usually it's a star-laden team and a tremendously explosive team, and they tend to not be engaged every game. That's been their history. And that's another difference. You know, we were talking earlier about pro hockey and college hockey. There are so few games in college. It's very rare that you see a college team come out and just sort of float around and say, this is our third game in four nights. It's not our night tonight, as you saw the other night in Vancouver. They don't take nights off in college. But, you know, when the Penguins are committed and when they're ready to work, they're really hard to beat, and their talent ensures that. I was so impressed by what they did against Detroit, just doing the simple things, getting the puck in deep and then going and getting it, or taking it away from the Red Wings, being physical below the goal line, going to the net, paying the price, that kind of thing. Sometimes they're not engaged, and sometimes they're trying to be a little too fancy or trying to show everybody how much talent they have, and that's when they get into trouble. So will they figure that out? I don't know. Last spring they were up 3-1 on the New York Rangers because they were doing things the right way, and then they stopped doing them and they lost the series. It's about a half different team this time around. We'll see what these guys have upstairs. But, I certainly look at that whole Eastern Conference right now. It wouldn't stun me if any one of the playoff qualifiers wound up playing in the Stanley Cup Final.
And really, if you look at it, like you said, the second wild card team, the last team in right now is the Boston Bruins, and I'm pretty sure that wouldn't be an easy series for the top seed, whoever gets them. Right now it's looking like four out of the Metro and four out of the Atlantic are going to make the postseason with this new divisional format. So that kind of raises some more questions here, more so than it did in the old format where it was just seeded 1 through 8 in each conference, because the Pens have had their issues against the Islanders, the Rangers, and the Capitals, the three teams that, as the season or as the standings look today, would make the playoffs. So do you read anything into those struggles against the teams in the division, especially the ones right at the top of the table right now?
Yeah, I do. Not that it would be an unwinnable series, but it just I think a lot of people around here in the last X number of years, probably since they got good under Crosby, maybe definitely since they did the back-to-back Stanley Cup final runs and won it in 2009, people just kind of assumed that, oh, the Penguins are more talented than everybody else, they should win. And that's the wrong way to approach it. Not saying they can't win, but the should thing doesn't apply.
Yeah, that's something that I think I've been guilty of at times, too, looking at a given game or a playoff series and saying that it should turn out a certain way, it should turn out on the Penguins' side just because they have more ability. But hockey doesn't tend to work out that often. It's not basketball where the best players are out there for 40-some-odd minutes. It's definitely a team game like you were talking about with college hockey. One last thing on the Pens, Mike Johnston. I think I may be more of a Dan Bylsma fan than most. I think in some ways he may have gotten some poor luck, of course, with Crosby out for so long. A couple of those seasons were essentially flushed, and there were some flaws, I think, in the Bylsma era, but remarkably consistent in the regular season especially, and making a couple of deep runs at least into the playoffs. But I've also appreciated Mike Johnston's approach, more of a quiet hockey professor type. What are your thoughts on Mike in his first, 50-odd games in the NHL?
I like the way he's gone about it. Very few things that he's done that I've kind of disagreed with philosophically, and they're pretty minor. For example, I might have gotten some fresh legs in the lineup for that Vancouver game instead of rolling the same lineup because they were coming off back-to-back shutouts, that type of thing. But that's really small stuff. I like the way Johnston has seemingly created a positive atmosphere, as Bylsma and his guys always tried to do. I like the way he is enthusiastic in explaining the game. Maybe he's not, upbeat or emotional about it, but he has some interesting things to say, and if his players are listening, they should be better for it. But it's going to come down to how they perform in the postseason. If Dan Bylsma and that staff had won one more game in that Rangers series, they'd still be here. And they didn't, and they're not. So, Mike Johnston's going to throw his guys out there in the playoffs eventually, and is Marc-Andre Fleury going to be consistent? Is Sidney Crosby going to be engaged every night? Is Evgeny Malkin going to be engaged? Are the guys who take some questionable penalties going to discipline their game or run around and be a problem? What will the health of the team be like? What's the matchup going to be? The beauty of it is we don't know what's going to happen, but I certainly think in Bosma's case it wasn't his fault they weren't winning, and if they get to the second round and lose this year or the first round and lose this year, I'm going to look at Crosby or Malkin or Fleury before I look at Johnston.
It's all ahead of them right now, and that's the nature of pro hockey. It comes down to the postseason, especially if you're a team like the Penguins, with those expectations that it can be a curse at times, but also it's better than the alternative, I think, being a team that's out of it right now and with absolutely nothing at stake. So that's all to come as winter turns to spring and the playoffs approach. Mike, let's look back at the Steelers season. You cover them extensively, as I mentioned, for various outlets and continue to do so into the off season here. Kevin Colbert just spoke recently at a media availability. But from my perspective, I almost thought this was a bit of an overachieving season for the Steelers, or maybe even a pleasant surprise this past year, coming off the back-to-back 8-8s. I wasn't sure what to expect. I thought they were a little questionable depth-wise and going through a transition, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But they get to the playoffs, and who knows if Haloti Ngata doesn't go for the Ravens. Maybe they even win that game at Heinz Field. That was kind of a letdown for sure, especially in front of the hometown fans. But back in the playoffs, back where the people of this area, the longtime Steelers followers, expect them to be. Do you feel like this franchise is back on the upswing?
Oh, absolutely. I think the NFL is trending to offense, and it's been doing that for some time. And I think the Steelers' offense last year was legit, and I think it can get even better. The shame Le'Veon Bell wasn't able to play in that playoff game against the Ravens, because had he been able to play, there's a chance they win that game. With Bell healthy, I think they were good enough last year to eventually lose to New England. And then New England ends up winning the whole thing. I think that's your standard. And it's funny, you know, you talk about how plays have to be made and, you know, sort of the who knows what's going to happen nature of these games. We're talking about Tom Brady now as the greatest quarterback maybe of all time and as a guy who's won 4 Super Bowls and all this other stuff. And if a rookie free agent substitute cornerback doesn't make an incredible play at the end of the Super Bowl, we're talking about Tom Brady as a 500 quarterback in the championship game, and New England is a team that hasn't won anything since Spygate, and just the drastic changing of fortunes on that play made by Malcolm Butler. That's the great thing about sports. You just can't script it. You really don't know what's going to happen. So the Steelers either have to get a little bit better on defense, a little bit better on offense, or they got to find a Malcolm Butler.
Where do you stand on the Patriots winning 4 Super Bowls now in 14 years? Not exactly 4-6 like the Steelers of the 70s, but taking into account the salary cap era, the difficulty of keeping a core together these days in the NFL, or really any sport outside of baseball. When you have the means in baseball, it's a little bit different. But in hockey and in football and basketball, it's tough to keep these teams together. But you do have the same head coach and quarterback in New England, so they match Terry Bradshaw and Chuck Knoll there, at least in terms of quantity, but not frequency, I would suppose, is the way I would put it. But how impressive is that to you, to have those 4 Super Bowls now and a couple of other appearances, too? As you mentioned, the Pats have been essentially every other year since 2000 in the big game.
Yeah, and a couple of appearances where they almost won those, too. In the salary cap era, I think it's phenomenal. They win 11, 12 games every year when Tom Brady stays healthy. They make the playoffs every year, or so it seems. They get to the championship game in their conference almost every year, and they get to the Super Bowl pretty regularly, and the cast of characters changes around them constantly. I think Bill Belichick's an incredible coach. I think Tom Brady's an incredible quarterback. I think Spygate and Deflategate are kind of interesting diversions or distractions. There's no asterisk to me on what New England's done. It's been the best football, I think, you know, since the Steelers of the 70s, or maybe that Dallas group with the triplets when they went 3-4.
Yeah.
Aikman Irvin and Emmitt Smith. It's hard to do. It's really hard to do it consistently. It's been an amazing run, Belichick and Brady in New England.
That's where I stand on that, too. No matter how you feel about them and how you feel about maybe their integrity in certain situations, you've got to appreciate what they've been able to accomplish just to be there as many times as they have. And like you said, a couple plays go differently, and it's a 6-time Super Bowl champion, Bill Belichick and Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. So something to keep in mind there. Let's wrap up the show with some Pirates. We're about a week away, Mike, believe it or not, considering how frigid it is outside, but about a week away from spring training, and the Pirates equipment truck just took off from PNC Park, headed down to Bradenton, Florida. And the Pirates' back-to-back playoff appearances, it still seems strange to me, and I'm sure to a lot of people, but it's a foreign feeling, and it's a good feeling to feel optimistic about what this team can do. And when you look at guys like Starling Marte and Gregory Polanco, presumably on the rise and bringing back A.J. Burnett and Garrett Cole, maybe taking another step in the starting rotation. You still have Andrew McCutchen, Neil Walker, Josh Harrison. The list goes on and on of positive contributors there and guys that you can believe in, and Clint Hurdle in the dugout, of course, too. Do you feel like that there's another step this Pirates team can take, or is it unrealistic to expect a team of limited means in the Pirates? I mentioned it in baseball. It's tougher in the non-salary cap league that MLB is. Can we expect the team to continue to trend upward?
Well, it's not tougher. You just got to spend more money.
Yes.
that's an ownership decision. It's not that the Pirates have been put in the pool of people that, like, they're playing with one hand tied behind their back. They're playing the way they choose to play it. The Yankees are playing the way they choose to play it, and they're playing in the same league. As far as optimism, the big question mark to me is how they fare without Russell Martin. I think in addition to being as good a catcher as he was, Matt, I've heard Clint Hurdle talk many times about his value as a leader and a handler of pitchers and how he makes all the pitchers better and how he has the hard conversations with people, and when things need to be said, he says them. Guys like that are really hard to find, and I think that's one of the reasons why Russell got the money he got when he left town. The ray of hope, and it's really more than a ray of hope, what they're building around is that outfield of Marte, McCutchen, and Polanco. I already think McCutchen's as good a player as there is in the game. I think Marte is heading in that direction, and I think Polanco has a chance to be better than both of them. So how quick does that come together, and what kind of damage can those guys do if they play almost an entire season together? That they're going to be tough to deal with if they're as good as I think they can be.
Well, like you said, Mike, with the way the Pirates choose to do business, it's important about getting those entry-level guys, those guys on the under team control and relatively inexpensive producing, and that can really propel you. We saw it with Garrett Cole 2 years ago. You know, Marte is still, you know, he's not on the initial deal, but they're not paying him a ton, and McCutchen is definitely a relative bargain at the moment as well. So the Pirates have that going for them, and seemed like a cliche to me when the Pirates were losing year in and year out that hope springs eternal once it turns to March, but I really am feeling like that right now, and it's a good feeling, especially. So I think Pittsburgh sports fans once again can feel lucky. They have three teams that they can have postseason and maybe even championship aspirations for, and of course we have the Colonials too. Mike, thanks so much for talking all of that right at this moment. I appreciate it. I had a great time.
Me too. We'll see you at the rink, if not sooner, and let's see how far these guys can take this year. If they can get back in that NCAA tournament, I think they're going to be more dangerous this year than they were last year.
Obviously, I'm on your side there, and I think more and more Pittsburghers and people from the region are starting to catch that college hockey bug that you have and that I have now too. That's Mike Persuda here on City of Champions Radio. We appreciate him joining us today. Thank you so much for listening. Remember, you can find Pittsburgh sports coverage at cityofchampionsports.com. For Mike, this has been Matt, and we'll talk to you next time on Blog Talk Radio.